Good. Bilal,
yes,
welcome
son.
To the John Covey podcast. This is episode 46.
Thank you.
So, firstly, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, good man. So, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, where do you want to begin, John? I feel like it's a massive question for me because it's connected to me.
It's connected to you.
But in terms of myself, I'm the director of Public Speaking Academy. I am a professional speaker. I'm a coach. I'm somebody who's a multiple business owner myself.
Amazing.
I have a property business and I have interests in a number of different ventures and concepts. But my primary passion, I suppose, is helping people find their voice in business. And that can sometimes stretch across a range of different areas. So right from the highest end CEOs of organisations, political players, sports stars, people in journalism, editors of some of the biggest organisations, media organisations, and even some film stars.
Really?
So right from that area through to everyday business people wanting to be able to share their voice.
Sure,
so that's what I'm all about. Yeah.
And I hear, I don't know if it's worldwide or whether it's just the UK, but public speaking is actually the most feared thing. Is it in the world or is it just in the UK? I forget.
I think it's accurate to say it's across the world. It's across humanity.
Yeah.
It's not something that's just stuck in the Western world or in the English language. It's across humanity, and it's interesting because my own belief is that it's probably been around since mankind's been around.
Sure.
So if you look at human history and you look at the way messages in religion, messages in movements and legends have always been told around the campfire,
close-knit.
The spoken word.
So
the leaders have always had that skill. And everyone else, if we're a follower, we're sat around that fire.
Sure.
We're listening.
We're listening, yeah.
Right. And then the more we listen, the more we admire, the more we revere. But within that space, whilst you're admiring and revering the leader, that fear starts to build don't necessarily take the step. So
fantastic.
I think it's worldwide.
And why is that then? Why do you think that the fear starts to build? I mean, what is it that gets in the way? Or,
you know, it's a good question, John, because there's so many facets to that fear. And in the modern world, it's about judgment.
Yeah.
Centred around judgment, and it's centred around self-doubt. It's centred around belief, self-belief. And often in our schooling system, especially in the Western world, especially in the UK, for example, in the US, we've got a place where most of us will have had an experience where we were asked to stick our hands up. Mm-hmm. Most of us will have an experience where we were laughed at for reading the wrong sentence in the English class or pronouncing the wrong word or a play that went wrong.
Uh-huh.
There'll be moments where we've experienced that, or even at teenage or in university or your first job placement or even around social gatherings.
Mm.
I can pretty much guarantee most of us have had moments in our life where we just think to ourselves, you know what?
Yeah.
Get me away from it.
Yeah. And then we anchor that emotion.
Yeah. And it becomes part of our identity, doesn't it? So I think it's common to most people. And those people who say that they've got no fear are normally either lying or simply not connected to their true self.
Of course.
So they're lying as well.
Yeah,
they're lying. Yeah,
it's a lie to back up a lie.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, you know, you and I were talking about this stuff earlier on, a couple of minutes ago before this podcast, and the power of self-doubt, i.e. if you failed and if you've had moments where you've gone back in your mind and you're saying to yourself, am I enough? Am I good enough?
Yeah.
Am I going to get the result? And when you're asking those questions, it shows humility. It's not something to shy away from.
Mm.
And in fact, I tend to talk to my students and my delegates and my coaches and clients and say, never hide away from self-doubt.
Yeah.
Embrace it. And use it as a quality control. Use it as a way to be vulnerable, to connect inwards, but also as a way to trampoline from. If it's that tension, you've got to go down to come up.
Back up again. Yeah.
So don't be afraid of that.
Good. Yeah. And that's incredible advice for people, because that's the thing that I see quite often, and I imagine you see it a lot more than I do, but it's the fear of being exposed, of, you know, looking foolish, looking silly, failing, all these things like that. So they're not prepared to take that step to bounce.
Yeah. And that's exactly it, John. So people will not do things to stretch themselves if they fear failure.
Yeah. So do you think, Bilal, that it's the fear that worries them more than... What am I trying to say? Do you think that it's the fear that stops people from doing it, or is it the fear of looking foolish?
It's a good question, and I think it's applicable to all areas of life, not just public speaking or not even just business. I think people tend to sometimes operate from our survival brain, our reptilian brain.
And
if you think about the way human beings have been built and experienced life, if something's red hot and you touch it, you need to learn the lesson not to touch it again.
Not to touch it again, yeah.
Okay, because it's a survival mechanism. And most of us will allow that control to take over in irrational areas as well. So if it's in an area of, for example, growing your business or getting healthy or developing that relationship or connecting with that person, reaching out, thinking bigger, we'll use that reptilian survival brain, that anchor, if you like, and we won't take that risk. We'll stay in the status quo. We'll stay in the comfort zone.
Sure.
Most of us will do that. And we won't surround ourselves, John, with people who can inspire, people who can dare to challenge you and say, you know what, I can see a little bit more in you and maybe you should try this or go and do
definitely.
And those
so
elements,
isn't it,
those elements are everything.
Yeah, the proximity of people that you're with is was it, who said it now? Was it Jim Rowan or someone like
that?
Yeah.
Your net worth is the average of the people that you,
I think
it was five people or something that Jim Rowan
refers
to.
I mean, like for you in your business then, certainly with PSA, like how important has getting in the right circles been to your business and the growth that it's seen?
So from a business perspective, again, we referenced some of this in the conversation, but we've got a diverse portfolio. So we will deal with the great, the good, the bad, the ugly, right at the top end. And that's been always challenging and interesting. And then we've always wanted to serve those who need this, and some of the small businesses, the entrepreneurs, and that's a very important part of our business model, because I believe, and this is where I work from a heart-centered place, in that I believe everyone has a right to have a voice. It doesn't matter where they've come from, doesn't matter what their background, doesn't matter what their mission is, they have the right to have their voice heard. And that's been a driving force for me, always, constantly. Doesn't matter what class or background, how many times they've failed, it's not about the same status quo, keeping everyone the same.
Sure.
It's about being able to, if you're connected to with your passion, if you've got a mission, if you want to serve people, if you're genuine and honest, we're there to help.
And that's
always been my...
Your driving force.
It's been my driving force, and it's my calling in many ways, John. It's what I'm passionate about, and it still drives me. The day that stops driving me is a day I stop. Time out, and it's time to change. So that's always been a mission, and I suppose that's underpinned a lot of the success. But the other thing that, and you know, I was talking about this, I'm doing a talk on this in a week's time. And I'm talking about the magic of community and the magic of belief. And when you have a community which believes in each other, and you're in a space where people connect and are on the same vibe and they're all growing together, because confidence doesn't come just by magic. It comes from being around the right people. If you're around really confident people and you're not confident, you cannot be confident because you're already behind everyone.
Sure.
If you're around a lot of negative people and you're trying to be positive, you can't be positive because you're around a lot of negative people. But where confidence comes from is motion and movement. And if you're around people who are who are really on a similar growth journey.
Sure.
They're all going the same direction. And it's been facilitated in a way where not just the expertise, not just the technology and the ideas and the methods, but it's the spirit and the intent and the inspiration that's driving it. Because everything starts with a thought.
Yes.
And if you've got that leading it, and then you've got people around you, the group think that is created. I'm going a little bit complex here, John, but you know, for the sake of the sake of the podcast, I want to give you some extra value. But when you've got that group think and it's aligned, and people are wanting to work together, and they're wanting to see each other succeed, and it's facilitated in the right way, that's when the magic happens.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's exactly what we've used in our community, in our academy. And that's one of the secrets that underpins our success.
So,
and it's, you know, it's something
that... it's been that for almost 11 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been a consistent theme.
Yeah.
And the, what's interesting, and they always say quality shines, and it's the consistency, the way clients who've worked with us for years remain with us for years on their journey as they start to grow their businesses, scale, but they still come back. They want to be part of the community, still want to continue their learning, they still want to progress. And as our clients have grown, we've grown, and it's been a synergistic relationship. So that's always been good.
Why do you think that is then? Why do you think that they've stayed with you and they've come back for more? What's the magic there then?
So the learning never stops, John.
Yes.
You know, it's not a one trick pony. Public Speaking Academy is a lot more than public speaking.
Sure.
In all honesty, we underpin business growth. We look at the psychology of it. We look at the personal and business development together, the synergies between it, systemization, how people can align their business strategy with their personal strategy, and then we help people create communities and tribes.
Yeah,
we facilitate that. And you know, no one else is really doing that in the way that we do. And obviously when people are part of that community and they feel that connection, they want to carry that journey on.
Yeah, definitely so.
And I suppose it's intent. You know, the intent that you put out, for me, it's always been about being able to facilitate results. And you know, you're not always going to be for everyone.
Sure.
And sometimes people...
And you have to come to terms with that.
Yeah,
don't you?
And that's absolutely fine. Yeah. You know, it's not something that I ever worry about. I'm always more concerned, and my focus is always aligned with the people who are around me.
Yeah.
And who have invested their time, money, energy, commitment to be around us, and you know, that's where my energy is going.
Course.
That's where my focus is.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's mission.
What I really want to do now then, Bilal, is I want to go back 11 years thereabouts to at the start of Public Speaking Academy. Mm-hmm. You know, like what happened? What was the transition? Why did you start it? And you know, was it
question.
To satisfy yourself? Did you suffer with public speaking? Is this how it all started?
So for me, the mission, and it's not something I've revealed before, and I'll reveal it today. But for me, the personal mission came out of a very, very difficult circumstance. So I'd gone through divorce. Mm-hmm. I was in a job that I hated. Mm-hmm. I'd been through a place where I'd suffered from anxiety and pain around, just generally around the leadership traits, things that you need to master when you're a leader.
Mm.
So when all eyes are on you, not just on the public speaking space, but as a leader generally, the pressure's on you, the dynamics there. And I'd been in some really serious scrapes, if you like, as
sure,
a leader.
Sure.
In organizations where politics had been played out, and for various reasons, there were games that were played, and that impacted me massively.
Mm.
And it was out of those spaces that I had to learn again. So I had to learn on a personal level, I had to learn on a business level, I had to learn on a destination level. What did I want to achieve? And I knew that I, very early on, that the one thing that changes everything is the way you communicate. If you can communicate your vision with clarity, with conviction, with certainty,
mm-hmm.
that's when people follow.
Yeah.
And I understood that. And I'd worked towards it. You know, it'd taken me a long time to start working, honing those skills. So I was beginning to hone those skills. And at that point, I was connected with certain people who were facilitators on that journey for me, later became business partners.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, it was the end of the marriage for me that meant I decided it was time to do something for me.
Yeah.
It was time for me to follow my calling. And I also knew that there were many people in a similar space who could do with the support and the help from people like myself. So yeah. that was really
the
foundations. And before I'd got into that space, I was doing a lot of executive coaching.
Sure.
Within the organization. So I knew I had the coaching skills, I knew I had the speaking skills, and I knew I had the business skills. So I'd got all these three different...
You got the toolkit.
Toolkits there. I just needed that spark, and it was the pain of the divorce, it was sure. the difficulties and the challenges that took place there in my personal life that made me stop and think, actually, I want to do something that connects me with my mission.
Yeah, totally.
And that's where PSA was born.
Yeah. Because like prior to that, I mean, like you were saying, that you've been in some really kind of high-level positions. You were the home office for the learning side of there. Mm-hmm. You were a chairman for a company.
Yep.
You were involved. You were a project director for a few years. And each of these roles were a couple of years at a time.
I've got letters behind my name, John.
Yes,
Bill Archibald, MBA, MBBS, what is it, Prince 2 and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Really?
I don't know all these different sophisticated things, but if I'm really honest with you, it's nice to be able to say I've got these letters, I've got my executive mm-hmm. coaching certificates, I've got this, I'm part of the ICA. But in reality, all of that was great, and I don't knock it, but the real world learning for me and being able to, the people
yes.
skills are everything.
Of course. Do you think that, as I was just saying then, you've kind of jumped around a little bit for them over 5 years, three different positions. Do you think you were looking for this calling?
It's a really good, point. And I think there used to be a bit of a joke amongst my social circles, like, what job are you doing today, Bill? You know, I must have done about 50 different jobs. I mean, I've been from 14 onwards, I've worked in London Zoo, I've been a security guard, I've been a doorman, I've been a window telesales, been in marketing. I've been a waiter. I've been all of those things, and much, much more. You know, and every single experience shapes you. Every single
totally.
Experience that you undertake in the world of work helps shape your understanding of the world.
Yeah. So, what made you stick at PSA then? So, you started this up.
Yep.
For yourself.
Yes.
Do you know, I don't know what your situation were, like financially, whether you were stable or not, but like you've come into this 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And unlike the last few years when you were prior to that, jumping around a few different places, trying to find a way.
Yeah.
You've stuck with this for 11 years. You've impacted so many people, changed people's lives.
Yes.
Do you know, what was the thing that made you stick at this?
I think you never stop growing in business. The beauty of business is it's dynamic. So the second you hit one level, you're looking further. It's like a mountain.
Sure.
So you think you got to the peak, and then you get to that place and you realize there's another peak, and there's another peak. So that peak keeps going. This is a mountain that never ends.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, John, is a challenge. I am passionate about the people I serve. I've got a mission where I want to work and affect the lives of millions, if not billions. I want to be able to equip the right people with the right tools to give them a chance to have their voice heard. And I genuinely believe with all my heart that if the right people could speak, the world would be a better place.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe that. And speaking shouldn't be a space for the privileged. It shouldn't be a place for Eton goers or Oxbridge goers. Speaking needs to be a space for everyday man and woman, and it needs to be a vehicle and a tool that every single person can level up and speak up in order to stand out, and that makes a better world. And I genuinely believe that. You know, people talk about democracy, they talk about equity and equality and diversity, but you know what, without the skills there is no diversity. Without that equity is just an aspiration. And I think what I learned in the Home Office was lip service. People would play the game. There was political correctness and all this stuff. But when it came to backing it up and giving people tools, when I was the one who facilitated that, I started to cause a disruption to the status quo. And when I caused a disruption to the status quo, there was games played with my career.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now Bilal was coming on the scene and he was changing things up. That's troublemakers. That's disruptor.
Of course.
That's disturbing the status quo. And you know what?
They call it an entrepreneur now, though.
Entrepreneur. There you go. And I knew then, at that point, that my calling was to be a disruptor, to disturb the status quo, to coach the right people, to support them and be an intervention, be that catalyst, and that's exactly who I am. So I love what I do for that reason, John. You know, I wake up every day and I love that.
Do you find that, like, the kind of companies that you're working with now, like you were saying earlier on, you work with celebrities and stars and big organisations, do you feel that for you to win their business, you still have to deliver a certain level of lip service?
I think to win their business, sometimes it's rather than lip service, it's more around understanding what their problem is and allowing them to be human. What I found in my world is it doesn't matter where people are. They could be the most powerful person of an organization, or they could be in the public eye. But behind closed doors, within these four walls, they want to be able to be themselves.
Yes.
And that's who I am. I'm there to make it okay to say, you know what? My heartbeat is raised when I'm walking in front of those cameras, or my mind goes blank, Bilal, and I know I look good over here on the pitch, but you know what? When I'm having to speak in front of the camera, I can't do it, or whatever it is. So it's absolutely right to be you, and it's okay. And I think your job as a leading coach is to make people feel comfortable. It doesn't matter which level they are. When they come into my space, they're my delegates.
Yes.
And I don't bow down to that, because you know, it doesn't matter what title they've got. When they're in our space, there's a leveler there.
Of course.
We all play the game.
Yeah, totally. And that's incredible advice there, right there, is that they're on that level.
That's right.
You know, it doesn't make a difference who you are, whether you've got money or not, or whatever it is.
I mean, just to give you a story, there was a particular client, and she was a very senior person in an organisation. And when she started to play the games that senior folk do sometimes, and her PA was calling me and saying, oh, well, you know, this is how it's expected and blah, blah, blah. At that point, I stopped it halfway and I said, okay, I think this is not the way I operate.
Yes.
And what I'd say to anyone who's serious is, as soon as, you should always be client-centred, but you don't suck up to the clients. You're not there. We're not in the industry of hotel services and all the rest of it. We're not in that.
The customer's not always right.
Hospitality industry. We're there to be polite and there to be human.
But you're there to challenge.
But you're there to challenge. Yeah. Absolutely. So don't be afraid of it. So in fact, that's what she needed. And she came back and said, actually, Bilal, you know what? You're right. I shouldn't be calling these shots like that. You are the coach. And tell me what I need to do.
Tell me what I need to do.
Yeah. And that's it. That helped her.
Sure.
In the end. So, you know, sometimes you have to be firm and friendly, but it's the way the business goes. And I'd encourage everyone to adopt that attitude. Yep.
So what, like, you travel around quite a bit as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you're here in Sheffield, London's home originally.
It's not actually, John. I'm originally a Sheffield man, and I spent 15 years in London.
Right.
So I did a significant stint in London, and I suppose my informative adult years were spent in London. Right. I was somebody who. And that's where I did a lot of my learning, but also a lot of my suffering, if you like. Because, you know, I'm a self-made man and I had to build myself up from zero.
Sure.
There was no silver spoon in my world, and you had to fend for yourself. And London's not an easy place. It's not paved with gold.
No.
And it's bloody expensive.
Yes.
So I had to learn the hard way. But I think those early years informed me and helped me grow. Okay. As a person.
Sure.
It's a wonderful place in terms of connecting and development and personal growth and opportunity.
Sure.
You know, it's a really, really forward thinking.
What's
place.
The biggest difference between what you see between London and like Sheffield?
I think if I'm going to be really blunt, and I will be blunt because that's who I am. I'm blunt Bilal. But if you look at the two cities, London's a place where you have to hustle.
Uh-huh.
Whether you're an Uber driver or a coach, whether you're a shop owner or an office worker, you have to be there travelling to work. You have to be there on time. There's a lot of demands in terms of financial commitments, and the pace is fast. And I think people are hungry in London.
Mm.
People are hungry. I think when we look to Sheffield and the district, we're in a town where housing's a lot more affordable here.
Sure.
Right? So the idea of having your own home in London, your salary might be 30, 40 grand. I'm talking about averages over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
But your first property is probably around about 350 mark.
Mm.
And you compare that with the prices here, and people don't have that same hunger.
Sure, sure.
So I think we're kind of privileged in the north in many ways. And I do think the opportunity, if our mindset as a community, as a people in this part of the world, can shift slightly, there's a huge opportunity. But people have to be willing to invest.
Uh-huh.
They have to be willing to expand their horizons. They have to be willing to work together, to collaborate.
Sure.
They have to be willing to take risks. Oh, and I think that's the gap that we've got in the north.
Why do you think that is then? Why do you think that people are conditioned differently up this way?
I think that it's probably historic, John. And you know, we traditionally a steel city. We've got a certain culture which works in many ways, but also needs to evolve now. I think we need to think of ourselves slightly differently. I think we need to look at ourselves as entrepreneurs, as a community of entrepreneurs, especially in the city of Sheffield,
yeah.
And stop worrying about small amounts of money. You know, it's really important that we allow money to flow.
Yes.
And basically, we stop being tight Yorkshire.
Well, there's a saying, we've got deep pockets but short arms.
Yeah, that's right. And what I will say is, people within Yorkshire are salt of the earth as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's some fantastic, amazing characters, genuine people, big hearts, loving, kind, and there's everything to play for, which is why I say this region has everything to be proud of.
Sure.
Genuinely has everything to be proud of and has huge potential.
Yeah.
And needs to stop being cynical, though.
Because yes.
when you get rid of cynicism, when you start to actually believe in yourself and believe in others, when you get into that place of belief, that's where growth occurs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think if the region starts to, as a collective, starts to think differently, and we lobby the services, the councils, the regions, the governance around the region, and we start to bring business here, you know, it's only good for the cities. It's got to happen. And I think, you know, Sheffield, for example, fourth, fifth largest city, we need to be with that identity,
yeah, yeah.
And become a home for business. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to move forward, and we need to press on as a community in that space.
Absolutely. Do you doubt yourself at all now? We decisions or things that you do?
I think self-doubt's part of life. You know, you'll have moments every day when you got self-doubt.
Yeah.
Embrace it. And don't get stuck in it.
Do you find there's a pattern? Do you tend to find that there's the same thing that you doubt a little bit? And if there is, how do you overcome it?
I think if it's familiar territory, I would say the more familiar the self-doubt is, the more you realise it's a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a pattern, at that point, you need to become good at being able to mitigate it,
yep.
And bring something that addresses that.
Sure.
So for myself, for example, if I'm in a place where I might make an assumption about a certain type of meeting, if I'm going to a group, a large company, and there's lots of board level execs there, and I might make an assumption that I need to play a certain game.
Got you.
If I'm self-aware of that, if I know what thoughts are going through my head before they even go through, I'm able to put some interventions in there. And that's really important. So it's a big self-awareness piece.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the word there, isn't it? Self-awareness. Like,
yeah, you've got to catch the thought early on.
Yeah. Does it really mean as well?
Yeah.
Like, because a lot of the time I was talking about this with a different podcast, is that like you might get really angry and frustrated, but actually if you stop, and as you just said then, and stop and mitigate it, the anger might not really be anger. It might be that you feel like you're losing something.
That's right. And the other thing is, it's I mean, a good example of this is road rage. Okay, and you see a lot of people.
Do you get road rage?
You know, I tend not to anymore, John.
And how did you master that?
And then, well, it's the points on my license. That's what I'm going to watch out for. So I've got to behave. But the thing is, it's important to understand people do think in an unconscious way when they're driving.
Yeah.
So it's a really good example to give, because if you ask yourself the question, anyone listening to this, for example, ask themselves, what do I behave like on the road? When somebody cuts me up, or somebody beeps at me, or somebody looks at me wrong, how do I behave? Because that's going to give you good insight into your own personality.
Yeah, sure.
And sometimes the my own behavior, I look at myself and I think to myself, why am I feeling agitated about that? It's only, you know, somebody's got in front of you and cut you up. Does it really, really matter?
Yeah.
And asking the right questions sometimes. Asking the right questions of yourself is a really good intervention, because then, you know, you're 2 seconds late. So what?
You're late. I find that, generally speaking, when things annoy you from actions from others, it's a part of you that's underdeveloped. Now, it's not saying that you've got to become an arse.
But
it's an area that maybe when people do rub us up the wrong way, it's because they're showing a side of them that actually we wish we had a little bit more of that.
Yes.
Do you find that permeates across into like speaking?
Well, I think when you're affected by anything, it's telling you, it's a signal.
Mm.
And it's an opportunity equally. So if something's agitating you, you need to ask yourself why. And what is it that you'd want? So you need to have an aspiration. You need to have a goal, if you like. And it's from that goal that you can then start to put the interventions and start to work towards. But if you didn't have that goal in the first place, if you didn't have that agitation in the first place, then you don't have that stimuli, you don't have that signpost.
Yeah, sure.
So you actually embrace it.
It's
embracing those things. So it's looking into things, and anything that happens is always a signal.
Yes.
It's always a signal.
Yeah.
We're always growing. So we're living beings, we're human. It's okay to fail, it's okay to trip up, it's okay to have self-doubt. You know, I'm not afraid of self-doubt. Does that make sense?
I think that's
a difference. And that's a good place to be. So self-doubt always exists.
Of course. Do you have a framework or a certain routine that you do when you start to feel yourself maybe getting a little bit of self-doubt? Is there a certain thing that you do? Do you use NLP, like an anchor or anything like that to snap your back?
I've got various frameworks, John, and I suppose some of the stuff that I do is using NLP techniques and anchors, but beyond that, and something that is probably even more powerful for me on a personal level and for many of the people that I've coached over the years, is to move into a place of belief and service. So when you start to believe in the people you serve, and when you start to think about their requirements and you tie that in with your purpose, often it makes your mission greater than your fear. And when your mission or your purpose is greater than fear, you let go of fear, because now it's overshadowed by something far greater. So it's a method that I've owned and talked about for a long time, and you know, I live by it myself.
Brilliant. Do you have certain rituals that you have to do each day to, as well? I mean, you was recently at the Tony Robbins UPW, and
he's very into priming and
priming and stuff. Is this something that's where we're leading? Actually, is this something that you do to keep yourself in a,
so for
as
me,
Tony says, peak state?
For me, physicality is really important. So the gym, running routines. If I don't get to the Peak District and do my walking, my hiking, I feel like I've missed something. So those routines are really important. Family is very important. That's an anchor for me. The love that you get from your family members is really important for me, and that helps maintain. And then working with the right people. I think, you know, your clients are also your business family, and People often think that they separate the two, but in fact, it's a pleasure to be able to work with the people I work with, and I genuinely do care for them, and I hope they care for me. I think they do. There's one or two here that I think they do now and again. So yeah, no, it's that's really important because you know you're very limited in life. Life is very short, and we know that. Mm-hmm. Yet we live like we're going to live forever.
Yeah,
and sometimes
and we think we're bulletproof when we think we're
and it's okay to be vulnerable, and it's so especially for the blokes out there, especially for the Yorkshiremen who think that they have to be tough,
wear the mask,
and they have to be strong, and they have to be constantly. And I'm guilty of it myself. And then sometimes there's people around you who will say, actually, it's okay to have your bad days. Mm. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to want to give up. And forgive yourself for it, and that's you're gonna have good days and bad days in business. You're gonna succeed and you're gonna fail.
Yeah.
You're gonna have a high days, low days. So just embrace it.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Talk to me about money. What's your like? The reason I ask this is that here in the UK, we have a real hang up talking about money, and as a result, people tend to struggle to get it to flow to them.
Yep.
So, like, what's your mindset? What's your beliefs about money? Should you talk about it? Do we talk about it enough?
I think people should embrace and have a love for money as a tool. Mm. Money gives you opportunity, gives you choice.
Yep.
People often have hang-ups, you're right, and they often think it's more money, more problems, money's the root of all evil. There's all these belief systems that are created to maintain poverty.
Sure.
But in fact, there's more than enough abundance out there for everyone. And you've got to have that belief set. Because if you don't have that belief set, what you're going to do is you're going to turn it away from you, you're going to turn the opportunities away, and you're going to be afraid of charging what you're worth. And if you're going to be one of those people, the problem is you won't buy, and I promise you, you won't sell.
Yeah.
If you can't buy, you can't sell.
Yep.
And that's a law that is universal. So people who struggle to spend struggle to sell.
Absolutely, 100%. Which is where it kind of leads right into the next part then, is that a lot of people know the need to better themselves. They know that they might have issues. Maybe it's confidence, maybe it's the speaking abilities, maybe it's the fact that they've got bad habits, but they often use the excuse that money is not available. And so the first question there is, why do you think they make excuses like that?
It's an interesting one, isn't it, John? Because you'll hear that as a leader yourself, and you'll hear that amongst people. And I think people have often told themselves stories in order to keep themselves where they are. Mm-hmm. They've told themselves and they've created belief which maintains the status quo. Because in reality, nobody wants to move. And the problem with that is, if you're reinforcing that belief at every opportunity, when you get something, when you get a window, and we've all had moments in our life where you've seen a great opportunity and then you've said, but I just can't afford it.
Yep.
At that point, those words, I just can't afford it, all you're really saying is, I just think I should stay the same.
Yes.
That's what you're really saying.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not about I can't afford it, because fundamentally, if you're, God forbid, if your mother, father, brother, sister, wife, partner was held at ransom, at gunpoint, and the ransom money of £1 billion for their life was put on the line, I can pretty much guarantee anyone would find a way.
Yeah.
And you always will find a way. You will always find a way. And the thing is, the problem that people have is they allow the limitations to control them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's what's happening there.
So the second question then that ties into that is, how do you change that belief? How do you change that mindset?
Well, I think it starts with us. It starts with you as a leader. You know, you need to demonstrate that, and you need to believe it yourself. I don't stop investing in myself. I never have. I'm a big believer in being able to demonstrate and lead the way. So I'm always learning. I always spend a part of my budget on my learning, my business budget on my own learning, and I'm always continuously refreshing. Part of the Public Speaking Academy journey has been that we've continually added new tiers to our offering. So we've never just stayed about public speaking. We've added business development. We've added personal growth and personal development, mindset change, all these different facets, but that's been borne out the leaders doing exactly that, investing in themselves and in the business. So you're always continuing on a journey. So number one, it starts with us. Number two, it's being able to communicate the value. If you don't communicate value brilliantly in a way that shifts belief in your clients, in your prospects, if you can't shift their belief system, then you're stuck.
Yeah.
Because they're coming in a space where their belief system is at point A and you need to get their belief system to point B. Therefore, your ability to communicate value, your ability to communicate stories that engage and move people, that's really key. And you've got to do that with absolute integrity and absolute truth. So it's a complex answer. It's not what, it's multifaceted, but it's for the leaders to demonstrate and then facilitate.
Sure. So this ties back, I mean, like from a sales point of view, I do a lot of myself with the sales training, but it's almost vital that you sell it to yourself first. Is what you say. That's one of the things.
Absolutely.
I'm
self-influence is massive.
If you don't believe in it, if you're not the first sale, if you wouldn't be prepared to buy it yourself, you struggle to get anyone to
that's
to
right.
buy it from
that's
you.
That's right. That's right. So everything begins with us. If we don't have a belief in ourselves, what we're going to do is we're going to hold our own selves open to their belief, and we're going to end up saying, actually, you're right, you can't afford it.
Sure.
Actually, I can't help you, and vice versa. So really, it's down to belief systems.
Of course. How do you then? So, like, one of the things I'm really big on with people is that there is a lot of competition in lots of different spaces in all things that we do.
Yep.
And if we do the same as everybody else, the only metric someone can measure you on is price.
Yes.
So, what is it that you do with your businesses to build that? No, I wouldn't say unique selling point, but to make you different.
I think it's about you being you, and it's always about us bringing our own personality and our own brand to any space. So the more we discover about ourselves, the more we're able to bring that out there, if that makes sense. So when you're bringing any new product, new service out, if you're able to bring it under your personal brand, and your personal brand is powerful, people buy into you as a person.
Sure.
And that's where the integrity, that's where the values, that's where the trust, that's where the consistency, that's when the hard work kicks in. And that's, you know, that's something that I stand for, and I believe and I teach, but I live by myself.
Fantastic. So just a couple more questions as we bring it into a landing this one. Random question, what's more important, do you think, the people that you know or who knows you?
It's a really good question, John. I'm gonna give a political answer and say I think both, John.
Yeah.
I think both. I mean, it's important to be able to be loved and liked. It's an important human requirement, but it's not something that you should live by. I often say to my delegates and the people who follow me, I said, look, you know, I'm not here to win your approval, but I'm here to get you the result.
Yes.
And if I have to kick your ass, I will kick your ass till you get the result. You know, that's what it is,
isn't it? Yeah. And then the next question. So 11 years ago, if you can go back and see Bilal 11 years ago, what advice would you give yourself about this journey that you've had?
I'd say technology and online is important. That is the future. And people need to get brilliant at that. But real life experience, nothing replaces real life experience, skills that you've got. So I've got no regrets in terms of being a real life experience person, but I think technology would give me an edge. And it's certainly something that we're investing in.
Sure.
And that's where we're moving. So
it's
been a journey.
Good.
But we've enjoyed it, and now it's time to spread it to the masses.
So the advice would be to tell yourself at an early age to invest deeper into tech.
Definitely get the tech ready. Have good friends in tech.
Yeah,
invest there. Make it a priority, but not at the expense of getting real world experience. Because you could be the best in tech, but then you're going to be copying everyone else and doing the same stuff as everyone else.
Totally.
Whereas if you've had real world experience, you've picked up all the knowledge face to face, which nothing in the world can replace.
Nothing
can beat that.
Fantastic. Bilal, that's been absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Pleasure, John.
To wrap things up, do you know, tell people a little bit about where they can find out more about the things that you're
working on. It's Public Speaking Academy. I'll leave you a link, which is publicspeakingacademy.co.uk. to email us by all means. It's Bill Al-Jamil. I'm available on Facebook. Come and follow me, follow some of the work that I do. And no doubt there will be some event that you can get yourself down to. It'd be nice to see people face to face.
Are you doing a big event, are you, soon?
We'll be launching a mastermind event in summer 2019. Right. So there'll be a lot of noise around that, and we'll be bringing some fantastic guest speakers from around the world to the region.
Amazing.
So some big stuff happening.
Incredible.
But there's always an opportunity. Where there's a will, there's a way.
There's a way. Brilliant. Bill Al, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
It's been amazing.
Absolutely amazing, John. Thank you very much. Good luck.